Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
Welcome, listeners, to our podcast, God Beyond the Bible, a podcast by seekers and for seekers. As always, we want to thank you for listening. Our goal here at God Beyond the Bible is to not only let you know it's okay to ask why when it comes to our traditional positions on the Bible, but to actually encourage our listeners to think outside the box of traditional theology. We hope you find our topics and commentary refreshing and inspiring.
And we have some shout-outs this week. One of them is to KRK52. They actually have a podcast themselves, and they've been listening to ours and commenting, and we appreciate that.
Very much.
SLM, Burgerman, Maza, JB, John Isham, and Maddie that have all been listening. We appreciate it very much.
Thank all of you. Wow. Burgerman. I like that.
Burgerman, yes.
I'm a Burgerman. Connoisseur of burgers. Okay, last week we discussed the topic of healing and medicine, and just as I was getting ready to print the outline for that episode, I received a call from a good Christian friend of mine who has been going through a rough patch with his health, and he's of the denomination and background where anointing with oil and praying for the sick are commonplace, and I reminded him that contrary to what many will tell you, some folks seem to get healed and others don't, and we have to stop thinking that if God doesn't heal us, then we're somehow less faithful or second-rate believers or that we've done something to offend God. The reality is, there is no real distinguishable pattern behind who God chooses to heal and those He does not. He agreed with me based on his experience, and he seemed to be encouraged a little. I'm sure he's been told over and over that if his faith was strong enough, he would have been healed by now.
Mm-hmm. So for today's topic, we're going to be talking about lies, lying, and deceit.
I don't believe it.
And in segment one, our questions are going to be, are there any real statistics on lying?
You can't believe them.
Does everyone do it? Can a person navigate this complicated journey that we call life without practicing lying and deceit to some degree?
Well, concerning the first question, our article source that we went to is going to be mentalfloss.com. I want to give them a shout out because I took this from them. Says, there are two things you can say for sure about human beings. Our opposable thumbs make us great at using tools, and we're all big fat liars.
I like that.
I do like that. So their research shows that by age 4, 90% of children have grasped the concept of lying, and it just gets worse from there.
And how bad is it? A 2002 study conducted by the University of Massachusetts said that 60% of adults can't have a 10-minute conversation without lying at least once.
And the study continues to say that even that number makes it sound better than it really is. Those people in the study who did lie actually told an average of 3 lies during their brief chat.
Oh, wow. And you might be like me, you're sitting there with your arms crossed, insisting that, you know, I'm among the 40% who don't lie, but that's what the liars in the study thought too. When they watched the videotaped conversation back, they were shocked at how many lies they told.
And I thought it was interesting, I was reading some offset articles from this one, and they did some studies and found that we do most of our lying between the ages of 13 and 17, that we're the most honest between the ages of 6 and 8, And if you've ever asked a six-year-old if you look okay in an outfit, you know that's honest. True. Yeah. And they actually found out that kids who have been diagnosed with ADD and ADHD have a real difficulty lying. They really? Don't understand how it works.
Well, cool. That's kudos to them for that.
But they found that one study that we read claims that as much as 40% of people lie on their resumes.
That may be a little lie. Does it embellish?
Well, does anyone want to guess which arena has the highest statistics of lies and liars? If you give it much thought, I bet you can guess it.
Well, to give you a little more time, let's give you the statistic first. Studies show that more than 90% of the people who participate in this arena lie. And no, it isn't politics.
Okay, so if you guessed online dating, you are right. This is according to a study done by Scientific American. With women, the number one lie is how much they weigh. Men, on the other hand, try to use their profile to convince their potential partners that they are taller, richer, and better educated than they actually are.
I gotta laugh here a little bit. Isn't the taller thing gonna catch up, I mean, pretty quick to you?
Well, yeah. I guess the weight thing with women will too.
But you're not saying, now does she weigh 145 or 150? Does she weigh 195 or 200? But you know, the tall guy.
Oh, so we're not talking about women who weigh 400 and saying 110.
I don't know.
Well, and I thought it was interesting too. I found a study from Harvard that showed that in general in life, men tend to lie about things that will make them appear better. And women tend to lie about things that will make them feel better. And I thought that was interesting when I thought about it. Just think about it for a little while and it'll... So, to go on to the second question of this segment, does everyone do it?
I don't.
I mean, well, let's suffice to say everyone has done it. But everyone has the potential to do it. And given the right set of circumstances, I think it's probably safe to say that any one of us might use the lie to our own benefit.
Okay, then time for a survey of our round table, which is actually a big square table we sit at here with all of our stuff on it. Have you, asking Trayson and Tabitha, have you told a lie or otherwise practiced deceit in the past 30 days? Now, this includes a fib to keep from hurting another's feelings or perhaps to make yourself appear in a little better light or just to avoid a conflict to fight with the spouse.
Yes.
Yes.
I'll have to really think. Yes. Did anyone just tell a lie?
Not in the last 5 seconds. We're good.
Okay. Well, to answer the question, does everyone do it? I think it's a safe bet that while everyone doesn't practice deceit on a regular basis, we all at one point or another, in one form or another, use the lie.
Well, and you know, I got to tell you guys, I was reading and I think it's very funny and it really shows our true nature. Credit Donkey did a poll in 2014. Yeah. And it,
the names of some of these.
When they polled over 1,200 Americans, and overall, only 3% of those polled said that they lied often, whereas more than 66% said they are seldom or never dishonest. But out of that same group of people, over 90% surveyed think that everybody lies.
Well,
so, I mean, we have that concept.
I had a friend that told me about these, and he kind of called them, these people in this lie that they were spreading this thing. And they said, hey, everybody lies. You're just going to have to get used to that. He was kind of lightly involved in politics and said, you're just going to have to get used to that. Everybody lies.
Wow. Well, and to bring us into the third question of this segment.
Okay.
Can anyone navigate this complicated journey that we call life without occasionally using deceit and some form or another?
Well, I'm reminded of an event in a church I was pastoring where one of the parishioners was constantly touting his high degree of integrity and honesty, and after a while, I presented him with a scenario involving some work in the community with his tractor. I reminded him that, legally speaking, when he took his tractor out and did some mowing for a neighbor, and even though he didn't charge the neighbor for his work, that if the neighbor gave him money, even out of gratitude, it was, as a gratuity, that was on the most technical level, he was obliged to report that as income from his farming project. He took the little parable very well and admitted that there are times that he might have compromised in that area.
So the truth is, we all see ourselves as basically honest, and we often ignore or justify these little breaches in our character by some means or another. But the fact is, there are many times that we're tempted to lie or practice deceit, and sometimes we fall to the temptation no matter how honest we see ourselves to be.
So if everybody's good, I think that brings us to the end of segment one of our 25th podcast. So guys, stay connected for part two.
And thanks for staying connected for part two of this episode of God Beyond the Bible, the podcast by Seekers and For Seekers. And today's topic is lies, lying and deceit.
In segment one, we looked at some studies and statistics on lying, and we found that not only is lying a temptation we must constantly be on guard against, but all too often we fall prey to that oldest of character flaws.
And here in segment two, we're going to talk about an example where an innocent lie or breach of honesty yielded some horrific consequences for people.
Well, Marilee Jones had a career with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, that's MIT, for 28 years. She worked her way up to the position of Dean of Admissions. Marilee co-authored at least one book and has appeared on television numerous times, describing and discussing her experiences and her career with MIT. She was often referred to as though she had a doctorate, even though she did not. After 28 years of competent and exemplary service, someone noticed an oddity in her application to MIT. Now, this is almost three decades later. Marilee had attended a very prestigious school in her college years, but she had actually gotten her undergraduate degree from a much less well-known and less prestigious college. Thinking at the time that there'd be no harm, she declared her degree from the earlier, more prestigious school. When this inconsistency was discovered 28 years later, Marilee was discredited and dismissed, ending her career in shame and disgrace. She had all but forgotten what seemed at the time as an insignificant indiscretion. She said that the most shattering part of the whole experience was the way everyone treated her after the embarrassing fall. Lifelong friends abandoned her in her dark hour.
Well, when I first hear that, you know, my opinion is that her actions warranted the disgrace. But as I watched the interview with Marilee, I could not help but feel sorry for her, knowing that that could be anyone or even myself that had a lapse of good judgment and in an attempt to further a life goal was less than honest in something I'd said or done.
I mean, just think about jumping back up and biting you 28 years.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And to see her, she was just so disheartened because her friend, you know, people just,
imagine.
Everybody yeah. just
well,
abandoned
more than the
her.
Career, losing your friends and all yeah. of that on top of it. And guys, the reality is, the lies that we tell and the deceit we tend to practice seldom yields this kind of consequence. But it does happen. I mean, do you ever find yourselves a little puzzled and even amused when a person holding a public office finds themselves exposed for a lie they told or some other form of deceit that they practiced, and how their peers instantly distance themselves from that person? Even the people of their own party act so shocked and disappointed that this person has done this terrible thing.
I know. And you see it all the time, you know. One has to wonder just how many lies get... I'd like to see a number. How many lies get told and how many deceitful deeds are done in the course of a single political election, especially the presidency?
I don't know. Can anyone count that high? One
it'd probably click like that ticker yeah. that our national debt. One ad says one thing, and 2 minutes later, you see another ad saying the exact opposite. It's a pretty safe bet that somebody's lying, possibly both.
Right. The truth is, getting caught in a lie is a terrible situation to find ourselves in, yet we find the temptation to take the risk overwhelming. Do we really think about what the consequences will be if our lie or deceit is exposed, or do we just deceive ourselves into thinking it won't happen, it won't ever catch up with me?
And I thought this would be a good place to put this in. I have found some lies that have actually really changed the history of the world.
I imagine if the truth was known, there's been a lot of lies that's changed the course of history. But go ahead.
But just a few. One of them that I thought was interesting, and we've mentioned him before on our podcast, was a Greek historian that was named Herodotus.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear a lot about him if you're an avid history channel like I am. But while we don't have exact stories that he lied about, several of his peers referred to him by the nickname the Father of Lies.
Oh my goodness. What a legacy.
One that's become fairly popular in the last few years was that George Washington never actually cut down a cherry tree.
Oh, no. Right. Yeah.
And a really interesting one that I did not know till today was that Benjamin Franklin didn't actually fly a kite with a key.
Oh, really?
He just thought it would make a good story, so he always told the story that way.
Spun a big yarn.
Another one that I thought was really interesting was that we always picture the pilgrims wearing the black and white outfits,
mm-hmm.
but they actually didn't. Their clothes were lots of different colors and styles, but in the 1800s, they were putting on a play, and they realized they didn't know what the pilgrims wore, so they just picked what was normal to them.
Wow.
And here's one of the biggest ones. We have this picture of Jesus with the light skin and the light hair.
Blonde hair, blue-eyed.
This comes from a letter that was allegedly penned by Publius Lentulus, who was supposedly the governor of Jerusalem during the time that Christ lived.
Yeah.
In his letter, he wrote, quote, Jesus, having hair the hue of unripe hazelnut, almost down to his ears, and a face without a single wrinkle or blemish, and beautiful, moderate color of skin. This letter was published in the 15th century, and believing to be valid, it was used to paint images of Jesus all over the world. But then the story started to fall through. Jerusalem never had a governor.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No record of Publius Lentulus exists at all. And when they started looking at the letter, they realized that it was written in contemporary English for the time.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So it changed 500 years of what we pictured Jesus to look like from the false letter.
And, you know, if we use any real estate, we know being Jewish descent from his mother, you know, he's going to be dark-skinned, dark-eyed, dark-haired.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He's going to be a dark guy. What is it? Fred Sanford. I hate to quote Fred Sanford, but Fred Sanford said, you know, you could walk around over there in Jerusalem all them years and have light skin, you know, around
exactly.
that desert or wander that desert and have light skin. We all know someone or have known someone whose whole life is just a web of lies and deceit. Do they think they're so good at lying and so convincing that no one ever suspects their lying? Or is it true that a person who practices deception actually falls victim to their own deceptive practices?
Right. And right now, everyone is probably thinking of someone, maybe even in your own family circle, whose whole life is nothing but a web of lies and deceit. Well. Even when they get caught in their own deceit, and it should be embarrassment enough to make them rethink this whole lying thing, they just spin another lie to explain the one they got caught in.
Well, once I had a man in our community speaking of his own son say to me, and I quote, that boy can climb a tree to tell you a lie when he can stand on the ground and tell you the truth. Or in the words of the sage Buddy Ebsen, who played the role of Jed Clampett in the 1960s hit TV series The Beverly Hillbillies, said, that guy lies so much he has to get somebody to call his dogs for him.
And well, Quintilian, I think it was, he said a liar should have a good memory. Because, I mean, you know,
that's where that got started. If you're going to, you have to have a good memory if you're going to lie. But
exactly.
The sad thing is people who operate in webs of lies don't have a very good memory because they don't remember what they just told
right.
you the last time you saw.
I once had a person tell me a story, and as they told me the story, I realized that it was a story I'd told them about a year before of something that happened to me and Tabby's husband.
And they had made it about them?
And the story was about them.
I had that
to
happen to me a number of times. One time, Tawana and I, we had a friend that did that, and Tawana said, did that story sound familiar? I said, yeah, it sure did, because that's what happened. That actually happened to me, and I told him that story a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And then he turned around and told it that it happened to him.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the fact is, although we are all capable of lying and tempted at times to do so, and sometimes we yield to that temptation, it sometimes can have catastrophic consequences. And people will react to our exposure as though they have never told a lie themselves.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that pretty well brings us to the end of segment 2 on our podcast number 25 on the topic of lies, lying, and deceit. Stay connected for part three and our conclusion.
Welcome back, and glad to have you back here on what this is the third segment now of God Beyond the Bible and its lies, lying, and deceit. In segment one, we discussed the results of some studies and statistics on lying and deceit, and we concluded that given the right circumstances, we may in fact all yield that I'm on the wrong one, ain't I?
No, you're
right. Am I on the right one? Okay. I thought I was looking at the wrong deal. For some reason, that sounded so familiar to me. I guess it's because I read that earlier.
But anyway,
we concluded that given the right circumstances, we may in fact all yield to the temptation to lie or be deceptive. Okay.
All right. In segment two, we looked at how sometimes a single lapse in good judgment can have catastrophic consequences, like as in the case of Mary Lee Jones and her career at MIT.
So in this segment, we want to look at what the Bible says on the topic of lying, and ask the question, is there ever a time when lying is okay?
Well, if you ask most people what the Bible says about lying, they will respond with, thou shalt not lie is one of the Ten Commandments. In fact, in abbreviated versions of the commandments, that's how the commandment is worded.
The fact is, that is not really what the Eighth Commandment says, and it isn't really the implied meaning. Exodus 20:16 reads, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor.
An ancient Hebrew law required at least two and preferably three witnesses to establish a claim in the justice system in both civil and criminal matters. Since the false testimony of a witness in these cases could cause a miscarriage of justice that could easily result in a person losing a civil case at great personal and financial loss, or even worse, convicted of a criminal act, which in many cases could cost the innocent person their life, the act of perjury was taken very seriously and held a stiff punishment. It often resulted in the death of convicted false witnesses.
Right. They would actually, whatever, they would say, I think the rule of thumb was, whatever would have been the penalty for the person convicted, you now get that penalty. Mm. That falls on you, so if it was death. Okay. The other product of bearing false witness against one's neighbor is that of the person's reputation being damaged or even destroyed by a person who falsely claims to have seen the person do something they did not do or to have heard them say something they did not say. We call that perjury and slander today.
Mm-hmm. So this was the original wording and intent to the command, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Again, it's something our politicians might take note of concerning their campaign practices.
Yeah.
So, is there any time when lying is okay or at least justified? One only has to look to a single event in the Bible to answer this seemingly rhetorical question.
In the book of Joshua, chapter 2 of the Old Testament, we have the story of where two spies were sent to scope out the walled city of Jericho prior to the intended siege on the city by Joshua and his troops representing the Hebrew nation. When the spies secretly entered the city of Jericho, they were hidden by a prostitute named Rahab. When the city officials heard that there were Hebrew spies in the city, they went to Rahab's residence and questioned her. She had hidden the spies in her attic and told the inquiring officials that as far as she knew, the men in question had left the city. She then helped the spies to escape over the city wall with the promise that when they attacked the city, she and her family would be spared. She was so promised and told to tie a scarlet ribbon on her door to identify her and her family as to whom it was the soldiers should spare.
Rahab is listed in the book of Hebrews chapter 11 in what is commonly called the New Testament Hall of Faith.
So what did Rahab do? She lied. She deceived the leaders of her own city, which saved the lives of the spies, and in return, they spared her and her family's lives while the rest of the city's residents perished in the siege.
And is it a misconception or a misstatement of fact to say she was rewarded for lying?
I don't think so. Okay, another interesting phenomenon of the Old Testament is in the patriarch Abraham. We all remember whenever Abraham would pass through a territory, he would lie and he would say that Sarah was his sister instead of his wife. She, in fact, was his half-sister, but, you know, she was also his wife. Abraham, being afraid that the men of the so-called heathen nations would kill him in order to take Sarah for themselves, concocted this lie with Sarah out of fear. He did this at least twice, if not more. Each time, the king of the heathen nation would take Sarah in, intending to make her part of their own harem, and would then discover that she was actually Abraham's wife, and would return Sarah to Abraham, being repulsed and appalled that the man of God would use such deceit and lies that could have resulted in the king taking another man's wife.
And an interesting thought here is that the so-called heathen kings actually demonstrated more integrity than Abraham himself did.
They did.
And we got to mention, each time Abraham practiced this deceitful act, the king would give him gifts of gold and livestock as recompense and would ask him to leave their territory, promising him safe passage.
Okay, so what does one conclude from the from this biblical account? I mean, as far as we know, there was really no consequences for Abraham's deceitful actions.
So then one can make the argument, at least in the case of Rahab, that there are certain circumstances where lying's justified. Perhaps in the case where a person's feelings are spared, where if we're to be brutally honest, it would be hurtful.
And that's just, I mean, we're faced every day with, do I just tell the honest, flat-out truth? And, I mean, there are circumstances. We talked about in one of our episodes about marriage. I think it was one on marriage where people would not get married because they would lose benefits and things. Right. I mean, let's just be really, really honest here. Government almost forces people
to be dishonest,
to practice deceit when it comes to taxes and things. I mean,
and it's not just taxes, and we've talked about this in our, even in our county, you see people, and there's nothing wrong with using government assistance if it's needed, but there's no incentive to help us do the right thing. It's all about if you can lie about it or you can deceive in some way, you can make a little bit more and get a little bit more help.
And you know, I mean, that's a great temptation. I mean, I'm not putting down the people that are getting these benefits. I'm saying it's just, I mean, guys, we face that deceitful thing of wanting to do the deceitful thing. And a lot of the red tape bureaucracy of government promotes that.
It does.
Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to justify doing, but you know, it's like the guy with the tractor thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if we dotted every I and crossed every T, it would be almost impossible for people to be in business and have, I mean, just to be honest with you. I mean, and it seems like they know that. I mean, but that's, I don't know. It's a terrible cycle. Do anybody have anything else to say before we conclude here?
Well, no, but I was going to say more or less on, you know, hurting people's feelings and things. I remember a girl that I went to school with, and I would always go shopping with her for all of the big events. And one of her, for graduation, she came out wearing this dress, and I will never forget it. And I've told her this story since. We're still friends. It was the ugliest thing I have ever seen in my life. And Danilyn knows I love her, so.
Yeah.
But she asked me if I liked the dress. And you could just see in her face that to her, this was the dress she wanted to graduate in. She absolutely loved it. And so, of course, I told her the dress was beautiful. And she bought it. And she was as happy because I could have told her that I thought the dress was ugly. And she probably wouldn't have got it. But I knew that was the dress she wanted. And if she felt good about it.
Reckon anyone's ever lied to the preacher at church? Oh, that was such a good message.
Is that what that you wonder when we tell you that?
That doesn't happen. Does it ever happen?
That no,
people would,
that never
would,
happened.
Would
no.
Pat you on the back, shake your hand at the back door, and say, or what about, and let's just, this is a bad place to go, but what about that person that sings?
Oh, gracious.
That doesn't need to be singing? I mean,
yes.
There's nobody jumps up and says, oh my gosh, get them down.
There are certain.
There's no buzzers to ring.
There was a popular TV show that when they would do the first, you know, auditions to it, they would have people who their families never had the heart to tell them that.
And so they would go audition for these and they had to find it out there.
On national television.
And it was okay on the Gong Show because it was funny on the Gong Show.
Sure. A lot of them were going.
The Gong Show wouldn't have been the Gong Show if somebody didn't get gonged. But, you know, guys, there's a time when we've just got to say maybe that's not your, I'm trying to think of my French word.
And let's not, milieu, something like
what
that.
What is that French word? Anyway.
But let's not forget, you know, there is a thing called tact. And we can say the right thing in a nice, we don't have to gong them.
I had a friend, I played music most of my life, and I had a friend that he said, I said, how do you tell somebody that, you know, you go on playing, you'd play groups, a group would go on before you, and somebody would go on to say, he would say, he said, well, I just say to him, you know what, I've never heard that song done that way before.
I have learned in my older years to go, that is a unique outfit.
Unique.
That is so you.
So I know when you say that was a unique message. That message was unique. Are we ready to conclude?
I think so.
Okay. Lying and deceit is generally not a good practice and can and sometimes does result in humiliation and great personal cost. We're not arguing that God may condone deceitful practice, but as in the case of Rahab and Abraham, we can't say with any surety that there aren't circumstances where a fib might be justified. You notice I changed the word from lie to fib. As we examine ourselves and are honest about it, we all tend to find ourselves tempted to practice a little deceit when we think it will serve us to do so. As for folks whose whole life is just one big web of lies and deceit, all we can really do is shake our heads and feel a little sorry for them because of their own, you know, their own self may possibly be the most deceived person of all.
Right.
In the meantime, it probably serves us best to resist the temptation to lie and deceive. That way we don't have to fear exposure. Don't have to have a good memory. We don't have to fear exposure and embarrassment or possibly even worse. Well, we hope you found today's topic informative and thought-provoking. Glad to hear your comments on it. Until next time, from Tabitha Tracy and myself here at God Beyond the Bible, God's grace, love, and peace on you, our fellow seekers.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.